I'd like to call the House Labor and Commerce meeting to order. It's Wednesday, February 27th. This is our first meeting, so welcome everybody. Members present are Representative Hannan, Representative Rivack, Representative Fields, Representative Stutes, Co-Chair Ledoux, and myself, Co-Chair Wool. We have a quorum to conduct business. I'm going to ask everyone to silence their cell phones, and I would like to recognize our LIO moderator, Eric, and recording secretaries Louise and Julie. And today we're just going to go have an overview of the Department of Labor with the appointed commissioner designee, Dr. Tamika Ledbetter. And that is our agenda for today. So if Dr. Ledbetter, you're ready to give your presentation with any of your associates, we're ready. And I'd like to recognize that Representative Tallarico has joined us. Yeah. You may begin.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chairman Wool and Co-Chair Ledoux and members of the committee. And for the record, my name is Dr. Tamika Ledbetter, and I am the Commissioner Designee for the Department of Labor and Workforce Development. Thank you for the invite today and this opportunity to provide you with an overview of the department and to tell you a little bit about myself. And I also want to recognize all of our wonderful deputy commissioners and division directors who are here with me today, and if they would just stand really quickly and be recognized. Thank you. And next to me is our ASD director, Paloma Harper. And so I just wanted to say, for the record, I was born and raised in the Bronx, New York, and I graduated after graduating high school. I went on to Virginia Union University and attained my BA in History and Political Science, and I hold a Master of Arts in Education, specifically Adult Education and Training, from the University of Phoenix, and I also hold a Doctorate in Management and Organizational Leadership. I'm an Air Force veteran who served as a chaplain assistant during Operation Iraqi Freedom. My military career brought my husband and I and my family at the time to Elmendorf Air Force Base in 2003. And so we decided then to make Alaska our home, and we reside in Wasilla, Alaska. My husband Fred and my three wonderful children are the limelight of my life. And our two sons, I'm proud to report, are currently serving on active duty in the United States Marine Corps. And so they're ages 20 and 18, and so I'm really excited about that. Our 13-year-old daughter is homeschooled currently. However, she recently applied and was accepted to the Matsu Korean Technical High School, so she will start with them in the fall. And so I'm really excited about that because she has selected healthcare as her pathway, and her desire is to be a pediatric cardiologist. And so I just wanted to let you know a little bit about that, because that gives you a little bit of insight into why I'm so passionate about workforce development and specifically career and technical education. And so just to get started with my professional background, I started out with the Department of Labor and Workforce Development in 2007. I was hired as a career development specialist with the Division of Employment and Training Services. 2 years later, I became a manager of the Matsu Job Center in Wasilla. I held that position for 8 years, and then I was promoted to regional manager and had oversight over the Anchorage Matsu Economic Region, which gave me leadership oversight over all of the job centers in the region, the workforce development programs and services that we provided. Our department overview essentially is our mission is to provide safe and legal working conditions and to advance opportunities for employment of Alaskans. And my goal for the department essentially is twofold. It's to connect Alaskans with job opportunities in this economy, and also to be strategic when identifying workforce development needs of each region. So we're looking across the state, we're looking at the different regions, and we want to build up the workforce within the specific regions so that individuals don't have to leave their area unless they want to. Part of our challenge is to ensure that young Alaskans are informed about the opportunities that are available here in Alaska, and specifically within the region where they live. And it's important for us, I believe, to work closely with industry, private and public sector, and our educational partners to ensure that our limited resources are directed at training that actually leads to employment. And so as the department leader, I believe that I embody the governor's message that Alaska is open for business, and I expect the leadership at Department of Labor and Workforce Development to do the same and essentially encourage the staff that work directly for them to embody that same message. I perceive the message or the philosophy that Alaska is open for business. To me, essentially, it means that we will direct everything that we do at the department to ensure that all workers and employers are being served appropriately and effectively. And so we have essentially key priorities to that mission. And those priorities are to develop an Alaskan workforce for Alaska jobs. We want to grow our own, and we want Alaskans to be able to have first priority of the jobs that are available and being created in Alaska. We want to monitor and help to coordinate career and technical education. In my mind, if you have a career and technical education plan that does not include workforce development, Department of Labor, then essentially you have a failed plan, because we have the connection to the employer community, private and public. And so we want to protect Alaska's workers through consultation and enforcement, and also income replacement for injured, unemployed, and disabled Alaskan workers. This slide represents our organizational chart. It shows you our three key components or key priorities that fall under the commissioner's office. You'll see there is a section to protect workers, there's workforce development, and there is income replacement.
Pause 1 second. If anyone has any questions, please feel free to let me know during the course of the presentation. Also, I neglected to mention our committee aide is Ashley Strout. If any communication with the committee members should go through her. And if there's no questions, you may continue.
Thank you. This slide was added, and I find it to be very important, and it was missing from our organizational chart on the previous slide. But a critical section to the department is our wonderful research and analysis section. They produce data that's used by each of our core service areas. This data includes an array of labor market information that's used to inform workforce development. They provide information on occupational accidents, injuries, fatalities used to protect workers, and also they provide information about the unemployment trust fund. And so, you know, it's interesting. Our research and analysis is called upon by many of you to provide information, and those of you who receive the trends, and if you do not, you may want to subscribe. But that information is good data, and it informs our workforce development. And so I am very proud of the work that they are doing, and how they put that data together and present it in a non-political fashion. The Alaska Labor Relations Agency essentially is a neutral quasi-judicial agency whose goal is to promote harmonious and cooperative relationships between government and its employees. I'm not going to read every bullet on the slide, but they are an important part of the work that Department of Labor does, and essentially they facilitate resolutions of disputes between organized labor and public employers. The Alaska Workforce Investment Board, I'm very excited about this particular group and this slide. If we lived in the state of Washington, we probably would have 23 or 24 or even more workforce investment boards. In Alaska, we have the privilege to serve under one board, which makes it a lot easier to coordinate workforce development efforts and career and technical education. And so the Alaska Workforce Investment Board provides policy oversight of state and federally funded job training and vocational education programs. It also provides an annual report to the legislature on the performance and evaluation of the state's training program. And so with the information that is provided, we can learn from what we've done in the past, we can coordinate our efforts going forward, and we can develop a workforce plan that works not only for private industry but for public as well. And it gives us an opportunity to coordinate with education providers, training providers, private training providers, and also our labor staff, our Department of Labor group. And it really is an awesome board, and they've got a lot of work ahead of them, and I plan to work very closely with that board to ensure that we advance opportunities here in the state.
Question from Representative Ledoux.
How many people do we have each year who are doing job training and vocational education through the Department of Labor?
Through the chair, could you clarify your question?
How many people each year on an annual basis are doing the state or federally funded job training and vocational education programs?
Through the chair, in terms of participants or people providing training?
Participants.
Okay. If I may, Director Westcott, do you have a number?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, we certainly have those numbers. I will have to get back to the committee with what that exact number is and for the last state fiscal year. But we can get you that information.
Can you state your name for the record, please?
For the record, my name is Patsy Westcott. I'm the director of the Division of Employment and Training Services.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, I will say back in the day when I served as a career development specialist, our caseload size was very high when it came to training participants. And so the average caseload size at that time used to range anywhere between 60, 75, and 80 and per case manager across the state. And so our numbers are very high. And as we train individuals into employment and get them placed, we are equally bringing new people on to those training programs. So, and yes, we will get that information to you. Thank you.
Right.
Alaska Vocational Technical Center, otherwise known as AVTEC, it provides market-driven vocational and technical training to prepare Alaska residents for jobs. In FY18, AVTEC had 197 long-term programs, program enrollees, and 1,069 in short-term programs. I'd like to bring your attention to the fact that AVTEC has an Alaska Maritime Training Center, and working with the university right now, they are working on a Domestic Center of Maritime Excellence delegation, which is a pretty exciting thing. Also, they offer the applied technology, which includes diesel and heavy equipment and welding. They offer culinary arts, energy and building technology, and information technology. And as of FY18, their completion rate was 92%.
Question from Representative Stutes.
Thank you. Through the chair, what is a long-term program versus a short-term program?
Through the chair, is it okay if I defer to our AESD?
Sure.
For the record, Paloma Harbor, Administrative Services Division Director for the Department of Labor and Workforce Development. Through the chair, Representative Stutes. A long-term program is defined as anything greater than 6 weeks. A majority of AVTEC's long-term programs are 9 months in length.
Thank you.
Thank you. Proceed. Well, I have a question. If a short-term program is 6 weeks or less, and you have graduation rates in the 90s, do you follow up? What's your follow-up time after someone gets employed after graduation? If it's a six-week program, do you check back in 6 months or a year? What's sort of your long-term employment rate other than right after graduation?
Through the chair, if you don't mind, or to the chair, if you don't mind, if we can get back to you with those numbers, because we want to make sure we give you accurate numbers. Thank you. Next slide. All right, Employment and Training Services, and you just had the wonderful pleasure of meeting Director Patty Westcott. So the Division of Employment and Training Services provides employment and training services to Alaskans, ensuring a highly trained and skilled workforce is available for in-demand industries and occupations. They promote activities and partnerships that strengthen training, recruitment, and retention of workers in rural Alaska, ensuring rural workforce development needs are also addressed just like the urban areas. Division of Employment and Training serves priority populations, just to name a few, such as youth, Alaska Natives, veterans, and transition and service members. Department of Labor's DEETS, or Division of Employment and Training Services, partners with organizations, private and public, to provide outreach services to youth, address barriers to employment, assist with high school completion, and provide career mentorship and also career awareness. They also promote economic stability to unemployed Alaskans through unemployment insurance. And so essentially, when someone is receiving unemployment insurance, the goal is for them to be able to buy milk and cheese and eggs and put gas in the car while they're looking for work. And we do everything we can to rapidly attach them to employment.
Representative Fields.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. As I recall, Alaska has one of the lowest levels of unemployment insurance in terms of the amount of money that unemployed workers receive. Do you recall offhand where we are? Are we 50th, 45th? As I recall, it's somewhere in that range, very low in terms of other states. Is that something that you recall offhand, Ms. Commissioner, perhaps?
Through the chair, I do not recall offhand, but we will follow up with you.
Thanks. As I recall, it's very low compared to other states.
All right, next. Thank you.
Labor Standards and Safety. And so the Division of Labor Standards and Safety provides enforcement, training, and monitoring of laws governing occupational safety and health, wages and hours, child labor, electrical and mechanical codes. And so this division also supports the Alaska Safety Advisory Council that is responsible for the annual Governor's Safety Conference. And so they're doing a lot of work with industry, and they've taken an approach of being more consultative. So it's important that our employer community receive the training and development and consultation so that we can prepare them not to have workers fall into safety issues.
Representative Fields again.
As I recollect, the staffing for wage and hour today is about the same size it was in the early 90s. So when you compare that to population size, we've had a huge decline in the number of staff per capita. Are my numbers roughly correct in terms of diminishing staff levels over time in wage and hour?
Through the chair, I do not know the answer to that. But we will research it.
Thank you. And I'll remind members of the committee that Commissioner Designee Ledbetter will be back in a little over a week for another meeting about her confirmation. So maybe some of this data can be available then.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
And Mr. Chairman?
Yes,
Mr. Chairman. Sorry, I wasn't trying to put you on the spot. I think it's very reasonable to respond later. Just make that clear.
Before we go to the next slide, I'll just say I really do believe that Alaska's open for business, and part of that is each time you all have a question, we do our very best to follow up with you within a very short time. And so thank you for allowing us to do that. Vocational rehabilitation. So vocational rehabilitation assists Alaskans with disabilities to secure and maintain employment. They also provide economic stability to Alaskans with disabilities through Social Security disability determination. determinations. I do want to point your attention to the fact that the average wage of employed individuals existing or exiting DVR, or Division of Vocational Rehabilitation, was $15.25 an hour, and that was $5.41 more than the hourly Alaska 2018 minimum wage. And so I do want to also add that years ago, individuals who lived with disabilities and they were working with Division of Vocational Rehabilitation, oftentimes they had a singular disability. Nowadays, it's a little more complex. Many individuals have multiple disabilities, and so the complexities of their issues really create a challenge in getting them reattached to employment. However, there are several success stories, and it really is a wonderful thing to see that many people are persevering despite the fact that they're living with disabilities.
Representative Ledoux.
So I see the second thing is provides economic stability to Alaskans with disabilities through Social Security disability determinations. Mm-hmm. If the state of Alaska didn't do Social Security disability determinations, would the federal government do them themselves?
For the record, Paloma Harbor, Administrative Services Division Director for the Department, through the chair or co-chair Ledoux, yes, that is, it might default to the Social Security Administration. They probably would assign it to another state disability determination agency, because that's the way it happens now. If our caseload is more than we can handle, they'll ask another state to do it. Or we have been asked to do other states' caseloads when they've been overworked. What it would mean is that those adjudicators, disability adjudicators, wouldn't know the issues that are facing those people that are applying for disabilities, because Alaska is very unique. They wouldn't know how to support the travel of the medical providers that need, or the consumers that need to come to the urban areas to meet with the medical providers that give the evaluations and all those factors that help us to better serve those claimants than if somebody else was doing it.
Thank you.
Proceed.
Thank you. It's nice to have a collaborative team. Workers' compensation. This division aids Alaskans with employment-related injuries and illnesses to get back to work. And so there are several commissions and funds under that support workers' compensation. And so I just want to bring your attention to a couple things. The Appeals Commission closed 84% of the cases within 12 months. However, a significant percentage of the commission's decisions are now pending before the Supreme Court. The other thing I'd like to bring your attention to is that an area of focus right now for workers' compensation is working with Medical Services Review Committee, or the Medical Services Review Committee, to revise the medical fee schedule to lower workers' comp medical costs in Alaska.
Anything else you want to point out on that?
Okay.
Representative Hannon.
Can you speak through the chair? Commissioner, can you tell me whether any of these funds in the FY20 budget have been redirected from designated fund status to the new superpiled fund that has swept in some agencies that we've seen, like the Fisherman's Fund in particular?
Through the chair, I'll defer that to the ASD director.
Again, Paloma Harbor, through the chair, Representative Hannon. No, none of our designated general funds have been changed to unrestricted general funds. They're all being presented in some of our budget presentations as general funds added together, but that's just the presentation. They're still kept in individual designated general fund accounts.
Okay.
Representative Fields.
Commissioner Ledbetter, I know there are a lot of factors that have gone into our very steep decline in workers' comp rates, certainly the work of former Representative Olson, the MSRC, as you mentioned. Declining injury rates, and I guess I'm curious, what do you see as opportunities for the department to continue on that very positive trend line of reducing on-the-job injury rates and addressing medical costs, thereby making workers' comp more affordable for employers while without taking away benefits from workers.
Through the chair, we have had a lot of conversation and continue to have a lot of conversation about how we can better support workers and also employers. And so if you don't mind, I would like to defer that question to our Director of Workers' Compensation, Gray Mitchell.
For the record, my name is Gray Mitchell. I'm the Director of the Division of Workers' Compensation. Representative Fields, it's a good question. We're continuing our work with the Medical Services Review Committee, and there are quite a few different ideas on the table. thank you. But, you know, at this point, I can't really give you any specifics. We're going to continue to look at different areas where the fee schedule could be adjusted to better reflect, you know, the realities of Alaska. We have some of the highest medical costs in the nation, not just for workers' comp, but in general. And so I think continued focus on that will help to produce results. We are also working with the Division of Labor Standards and Safety more closely and attempting to create scenarios where we can work together. The Division of Labor Standards and Safety, of course, is designed to help accidents, you know, avoid accidents from happening. And workers' comp is the division that comes in later and assists workers who do have accidents and make sure that they get the benefits that they need. And so one of the plans that's in the works is to combine the two divisions together, which hopefully will produce some efficiencies and you know, better approach the issues that both workers' compensation and labor standards and safety faces to drive those rates down further and coordinate wherever we can to help employers have fewer accidents and then be more efficient with how we handle it when an accident does happen.
Representative Hannon.
Could you, through the chair, could you speak to Commissioner Designee's comment that we have a number of workers' comp cases pending before the Supreme Court, and whether that's because of a change in the law last year, or whether, if you could speak to that.
Through the chair, Representative Hannon, there's probably a few reasons for that, but in general, decisions from the Workers' Compensation Appeals Commission are appealed to the Supreme Court at a fairly high rate. Nearly 50% of the cases are appealed to the Supreme Court, and so there's a few of them that have backed up, and some of the reasons may be that it just takes a while for issues to reach the Supreme Court level. You know, the Workers' Compensation Board is the initial appellate body when there's a dispute about benefits. They make a determination using a three-member panel, and then those decisions are appealed to the Appeals Commission. Sometimes they end there. They're, you know, there will be a lag between the period when enough, I guess, legal energy is developed to pursue a case to the Supreme Court. And so many of the issues that are coming to the Supreme Court now were actually the result of legislative changes that happened back in 2005. So it's not necessarily, you know, it takes a while, I guess, for these cases to mature and end up before the Supreme Court.
Follow up?
I have a follow up, but a slight tangent, if that's okay, which is some contractors brought to my attention that the change last year in the law on workers' comp to allow sole proprietor subcontractors to no longer have to carry or to not carry workers' comp, that at the appeals level, the appeals board is finding the general contractors responsible. And even though the law was written so that they should not be responsible for the subcontractors
carrying workers' comp or not having comp, that they were finding that the appeals commission was still holding them all responsible. And I'm wondering if you see that, and are we going to just continue to have more appeals to the Supreme Court because the law did not fix what we set out to fix, which was to end up with a subcategory of subcontractors who may or may not carry workers' comp, but then when injured on the job, it's coming back on the general contractor.
Through the chair, that's a big question. I believe the bill that you're talking about, the legislation you're talking about, is House Bill 79, which one of the provisions within that bill created a new 8-point test for independent contractors. And that was created because over time, many businesses were misclassifying employees as independent contractors to avoid not only workers' comp, but unemployment insurance taxes and all of the other requirements that go along with labor. And so that definition was created, I think, to, I mean, the intent behind the law was to limit the misclassification of workers as independent contractors who really should be employees. And so what I have heard, of course, this is the law just took effect, this definition, I believe it was in October of 2018, the new definition went into effect. And so we're really just barely starting to see the impacts on the market. It, you know, it's going to take a couple of years before we really can see how that impacts rates or behaviors in the employer community and how they deal with independent contractors. But I think what you're seeing, this is a whole nother side of it, is that in workers' compensation, the insurance companies have an obligation to make sure that when they issue a policy that the employer is properly classifying workers because they want to get their due premium. And so what I have heard is that there's been an increased focus since that definition changed from insurers to make sure that companies are properly classifying employees. And this is hitting contractors, construction contractors, more than other employers because construction contracting in general involves subcontracts, and sometimes the subcontract arrangements are not very formal. And so when an insurer comes in and asks the upline contractor for all of the records pertaining to a subcontractor or a second-tier subcontractor where the subcontractor that they subcontracted with and further some contracts down the line, that those records haven't been kept. And that's creating a problem for contractors. It's not so much that, you know, there was a change that excluded people who are, sole proprietors. It's that, you know, I think the contractor groups are starting to realize, hey, we need to do a better job of documenting our relationships because the insurers have tightened up their processes related to this definition.
Thank you.
Representative Fields.
Well, I appreciate my colleague asking this question, and thanks for that explanation about the 8-point test. I think one of the reasons I asked about workers' comp is I think implementation of HB 79 consistent with legislative intent is really important and a significant opportunity to continue improving workplace safety and bring down workers' comp costs. As y'all know, all too many of the recent workplace fatalities are largely a result of misclassification and associated exposure of employees to unsafe working conditions. At the same time, HB 79 provides clarity for businesses by putting into statute what it really means to be an independent contractor, whereas before employers had to read case law going back 30 years that was based on the first case was related to exotic dancers. So, you know, in a sense, it was unfair to employers to expect them to try to interpret decades-old case law. My question is, Mr. Mitchell, why would we care if employers misclassify their employees? What are the public policy implications, and what are the implications in terms of worker safety and impact on certain budget programs in the state?
Through the chair, Representative Fields, on one hand, I think one of the main reasons that we should care is that it creates an unfair competitive advantage for businesses who are willing to skirt the rules when one employer is doing their best to follow the rules, and then another employer comes in and basically treats all of their workers as independent contractors. It creates an unfair competitive advantage for that employer, and that's not right, obviously. But then secondarily, and maybe not secondarily, but equally important, it creates risks for the workers. There's significant risks when someone is misclassified as an independent contractor and they're truly an employee and they become injured through employment. They really don't have access to the same types of coverage that would protect them long term, and that they should have, really. That's what the law requires, and if someone is an employee and they get hurt on the job, they should have access to workers' comp benefits. And if someone's misclassified, then they're not going to have access to those benefits. And many times private or health care policies that are not designed for workers' comp will not cover an accident if it happens on the job. And so there's a significant risk for the individual Alaskan who gets put in that position of being misclassified as an independent contractor.
Thank you for that explanation.
Any more questions? You may proceed.
Thank you. Yes, this is your slide.
All right, again, for the record, Paloma Harbor. So this is a slide on the department's FY 2020 governor's amended budget. The department's FY 2020 governor's amended budget totals $148.3 million. 50% of which is federal funds at $74.9 million. There are three key highlights for the department in the governor's amended budget. The first is that we experienced the same statewide executive branch travel reduction that all other departments received for a general fund reduction of $146,700. We discontinued an agreement with the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority that had supported a statewide reentry program coordinator. We determined that we could continue those efforts at the local level using existing federal funding and job center staff and see the results that we needed to see for that program. And then the Mental Health Trust Authority could use those funds for other trust priorities. The third item is that we have a program called the Technical and Vocational Education Program that in statute it requires us to distribute the full amount in the fund every year. The amount has gone up, and so there's an additional $1.5 million going to all the TVEP recipients. We call it TVEP. Recipients in FY 2020, AVTEC, our Alaska Vocational Technical Center that the commissioner spoke to earlier, is receiving an increase of $261,700. We didn't want to grow their overall budget, so we've reduced their unrestricted general funds by the same amount. So it's a net zero budget change for them. Those are the three highlights for our FY 2020 budget.
Representative Fields.
Question. I have concerns about the elimination of the Mental Health Trust Authority funded position. In full disclosure, I worked in the department and saw it firsthand and didn't think that position lived up to its full potential. On the other hand, it did seem like a necessary position for the department to do its role in terms of supporting reentry. So I guess all I would ask is that the department come back to us at some point in time in the not too distant future and attempt to quantify what y'all are doing, through, I guess, regional job centers that would have otherwise been done by this position to ensure that department-wide we are sustaining the same level of support that reentry really demands, because if people don't have a job when they get out of incarceration, it's very hard for them to remain in the community.
Through the chair, as you know, Representative Fields, I have worked for the department for almost 12 years. And so often our programs rise and fall on one individual being responsible for the program. And so I think it's important that every staff person knows how to ensure that every individual who wants a job has the opportunity for employment. And so I can assure you that our services delivery as it pertains to reentrance has not decreased, but in fact we have spread the wealth throughout the different job center staff in order to maintain that same level of service.
Representative Hannon.
My question is on the TIVA funds, if that's okay.
Yep.
TIVA, through the chair. So you referenced that that was supposed to be expanded completely annually, but it seems like there's, so was it not being done? Is that why there's a substantial increase of contribution to AvTech?
Again, Paloma Harbor, through the chair, Representative Hannon. The amount in the fund changes every year. It's a percentage of wages paid, and so when jobs are going down and there's fewer wages, there's less in the fund. When jobs are going up or there's higher wages in general, then the amount in the fund is healthier and we can distribute more. We base our distribution on a projection. We had been projecting larger wage reductions the last couple years than we had actually experienced. So we have a little bit higher fund balance now because we distributed less the last couple years. Now we have more to distribute and everybody's getting a piece of that.
Can I
follow up, Representative Hannon?
So I guess I'm a little concerned that we're going to give AvTech a big boost but take away their unrestricted general fund, and then perhaps we have a decline in wages to generate that fund the following year, yet we don't have undesignated general fund allocation mm-hmm. because we gave it away.
Sure.
I've had many students successfully complete programs at AvTech who remain gainfully employed across Alaska in technical programs, and I am concerned that we create a scenario where we're not going to be able to meet the needs 2 years from now.
Through the chair, Representative Hannon, I am very conservative in those TVET projections, and so I've been holding it, as I said, a little bit down the last couple years. We've seen very strong revenue to that fund, and we're projecting even stronger revenue to that fund. I'm holding it steady because I don't want to overproject and then have all of those TVET recipients, the university, the regional training centers, AvTech, all experience a future year decline again. So we're pretty conservative when we build those projections. It's not to say that at some point in the future we couldn't see a decline again.
Okay. Thank you.
Go ahead.
Okay, our vision for the department. It's really simple. It's to ensure Alaska is open for business, which is consistent with the governor's message, which means we are planning to increase consultation efforts to avoid incidents in the first place. And also we want to reduce burdensome and inefficient processes. We'd like to ensure Alaskans are prepared for jobs in their communities. That means we need to provide services across the state, not just in the urban areas. We need to engage industry to ensure we are training for the jobs that are actually available. We also need to bring other industries to Alaska. We'd like to connect young Alaskans early with job opportunities in the Alaskan economy and help them to know all of their options. And also we'd like to ensure the most efficient and effective delivery of services, which means to identify business process alignment and efficiencies. And so I can tell you from personal experience that the Department of Labor and Workforce Development is a wonderful department to work for. It's filled with the most dedicated employees you would ever want to meet. They are committed. They tend to to remain with the department a very long time. They are so supportive of the mission, and their desire is to help Alaskans and to protect them and to employ Alaskans. And so the overall vision that I have for the department is to build an internal workforce that will have the public's trust and also to deliver services in a fashion that meets the needs of every Alaskan. And so I would say, based on my extensive workforce development background, it's critical that we engage our partners, both private and public, and maximize our opportunities in Alaska. We've got a bright future. We just need to tap into it. And so, again, I echo the governor's message that we are open for business, and I look forward to the opportunity to connect Alaskans with training and employment so that our locally grown workforce will drive the economy in this great state that we all call home. Thank you.
Representative Hannon.
Thank you for those comments, and through the chair. Last week, one of the administrative orders that the governor did away with was dealing with apprenticeship programs that we'd been in place for 4 years, making sure that all of our trade unions, apprenticeships programs that are really diverse in nature, were being hired and giving training opportunities on all public dollar projects. Can you tell me what's your commitment to making sure, in lieu of there being an administrative order that directs that, that we hold up that commitment, that young Alaskans in apprenticeship trades programs are going to have the opportunities to continue to work and train in their fields?
Through the chair, I'm going to allow the ASD director to respond, and then I'll comment.
Through the chair, Representative Hannon, again, Paloma Harbor, we found that the reporting requirements of the administrative order requiring a certain level of apprenticeship utilization were extreme. And I think they were extreme for the contractors who had to report very detailed records and the employers that are bidding on those contracts through DOT. DOT had to build a system to try and get us that data. Then we had to have our wage and hour staff, who are limited, try and audit that data, and it was overly burdensome, the whole process. We can effectively work with employers and our apprenticeship programs to help them find employment without this very burdensome process.
And again, through the chair, Representative, our goal is to ensure that every individual that wants an opportunity to work has that opportunity. And so there are several ways to ensure that that happens, and we want to do it in a way that's efficient and effective and not cumbersome and burdensome to our employer community. And so I can assure you that as it relates to younger workers, as it relates to apprentices, as it relates to any individual that's interested in employment, we're going to connect them with those jobs, good paying jobs that are commensurate to the wages that they need to earn based on what they're doing, as quickly as possible.
Representative Fields had a question.
Thanks, really just a statement. First of all, my private sector job is with the laborers union. There are laborers who are registered apprentices, and I don't think that this administrative order will have a significant effect on my employer, but I do want to say that for the record. The apprenticeship requirements that were repealed by Governor Dunleavy actually go back to a 2006 Murkowski administrative order that first established apprenticeship utilization requirements in the Department of Transportation. The AO that Governor Dunleavy repealed repealed both the Murkowski requirements and the requirements for additional agencies that were put in place by Governor Walker. Now, because of the relatively recent nature of the Governor Walker admin order, those requirements really hadn't taken effect. One of the agencies covered was DOA. We haven't built a lot of buildings given the state of the budget in the last 3 years, so we weren't actually taking apprentices off the job by repealing those Walker requirements. It is possible that there will be fewer apprenticeship opportunities on highway projects, and you know, to me, to repeal such a long-standing order raises real questions, because historically we have had really strong support across administrations for apprenticeship, going back to Murkowski, Commissioner Clary, Commissioner Bishop, Governor Palin, Governor Walker. I also want to put on the record that under the previous administration, wage and hour working with contractors establish electronic certified payroll so that collection of records is more efficient, and that is a way to collect apprenticeship information. So, Commissioner Ledbetter, I certainly don't blame you for the decisions that are made on the third floor, but I would take issue with the notion that this is extremely burdensome, because for Davis-Bacon projects, this is already information that's being collected per federal requirements.
Anyone else have any comments or questions for Commissioner Designee Ledbetter? Seeing none, I will ask a question or two myself. As far as keeping jobs for Alaskans in Alaska, my observation and is no matter if it's a fish processor in Kodiak, a hotel in Denali Park, a Pogo mine in Fairbanks or up on the North Slope, I see a very high number of out-of-state workers coming up to fill those jobs. Alaska has a high unemployment rate. I know you have job centers that people can access. What's your short-term or goal or vision to sort of turn that tide around? I know it didn't used to be quite so many seemingly out-of-state people coming up for various skill-level jobs. Some are highly skilled, some are not so skilled. So I would like to see some sort of effort from the Department of Labor to try to get Alaskans to fill some of these jobs. And do you have a thought on that or a vision on that?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We are doing everything we can to come up with ways to encourage Alaskans to pursue the opportunities that are available to them. You mentioned the high unemployment rate. It's difficult to see that number, knowing that there are available jobs that individuals seem to not be as interested in. And so our focus now is to connect younger workers with those opportunities by increasing their awareness of what jobs are available. There used to be a time when young people would go to the job site with their parent or their uncle or aunt. And that's not happening as much anymore. And so we need the elder generation to change their conversation about some of the different employment opportunities, the trade opportunities, what it means to have a first job. We need the elder community to get excited about the type of work that they're doing and let younger workers know that honest work is good work. And so we have an effort right now to attract younger workers and to get them closely attached with job opportunities as quickly as possible. And I think that's the first thing that we need to do to try to fill some of these positions with local Alaskans.
I have a couple follow-ups on that one. And I guess I just will comment myself, because in my other job, I am an employer, and I talk to a lot of other small business owners like myself. And the constant problem we all have is finding good help and finding good labor. And it's unfortunate. And I know you have job training facilities and you have job centers. And I didn't know if there's any outreach type programs to reach kids in high school or even young adults that don't happen to be seeking and nowadays with social media, internet, Craigslist, and all this stuff, are they finding you as obvious as they're finding other things as far as looking for work?
Mr. Chair, we have an issue and we do have a problem, because we still have an antiquated model of how we believe individuals seek employment. And so instead of job center staff perhaps waiting for, job seeker X to visit a job center, it's important for us to get out of the office and go to them. And so again, Alaska is open for business means more than just waiting for people to approach the job center staff or the Department of Labor staff, but we have to make a concerted effort to go to where the population is and encourage them into the different career opportunities that are available.
Thank you. Thank you for that answer, too. Representative Stutes.
Thank you. And through the chair, along that line, have you reached out to, say, the seafood industry? I know that every year they have a tremendous problem filling the vacancies and filling the workforce to the degree where, as I'm sure we're all aware, a few years ago they were even bringing in people from outside the United States to fill this. And so, I mean, that's a huge concern, and particularly if there's an opportunity to train them in the different areas, you know, refrigeration, whatever it might be. I mean, that seems to be a vast arena that you could associate with.
Through the chair, our deputy commissioner, and if he could move forward, if possible, spent quite a few, he's been with the department for 26 years and spent many of those years, over a decade, as the seafood coordinator, and has connected various employers with job seekers. And if you could just speak to that. If that's okay. Good.
For the record, my name is Nelson San Juan, Deputy Commissioner, Department of Labor. So we've been working closely with employers statewide, and just this morning, I met with major employers to continue our effort to get our Alaskan trained and hired in the seafood industry. And we are, this year we're planning of creating an employers forum to get together with the different employers in the seafood industry to make sure that they are getting enough workers and to alleviate those shortages of workers in the state.
Representative Fields.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate my colleagues bringing up this issue of Alaska Hire, and it reminded me that I should ask, are you committed to continuing Alaska Hire requirements for the zone of underemployment consistent with statute, given that we will continue to meet the statutory requirements of having unemployment that exceeds the national average, and are you committed to continuing that for all trades in all localities? I don't remember offhand the date at which the zone of underemployment determination will come up for renewal.
Through the chair, I'll make sure I get a specific answer for you on that, but I will say I'm committed to every Alaskan who desires to go to work to have an opportunity, and I just want to be able to connect job seekers with good and viable employment. And anytime we have a lack of qualified Alaskans, we have an issue. And so I'm going to do everything I can, because I'm pro-Alaska, and I want to make sure that our economy is booming and bustling. And the way that we do that, we need to raise up our own workforce so that we can have qualified applicants for those positions that are available.
Follow-up, I guess I should, I'm sure my colleagues are aware, but I guess I should say for the record, the Alaska Hire requirements that I'm talking about are 90% Alaska Hire on state-funded projects, which is what we have the legal authority to cover. And I would appreciate it if we could have that answer in writing by the next time that the commissioner comes in. Every administration except for one has sustained those requirements since they were put in place, as I recall, in the late 80s.
And through the chair, that is a statutory requirement. Yes. Yes.
Thanks. Any questions or comments by any committee members? Seeing none, I'd like to thank Commissioner Ledbetter and Ms. Harbor for and the staff of the Department of Labor for coming in today. We will have you back. I will adjourn this meeting. We will meet again on Friday at 3:15, where we'll have an overview of the Department of Commerce. And we will hear from Commissioner Ledbetter in the following weeks for confirmation purposes and any other questions we may have, and look forward to getting answers to some of the questions that were posed today. So it's 4:15 and this meeting's adjourned.